did I get in this situation? You know, I was arguing with him, you know, and so I get back, and it's just about dark, and this red truck pulls up behind me, pulls up in there, and the guy jumps out. He said, you know, he said, I don't hardly ever help nobody. But he said, you know, something just spoke to my heart and said, help this man. And he said, I got to looking around and back, and I found a transmission exactly that will fit your van. And he said, I'm going to help you put it in. Man, it didn't take me but just a minute. I slid under that van about the time he did, and we started unbolting that transmission, and we dropped that transmission out and hooked it back up. And then he said, I want you to follow me on down here to this other little store, or this other little town down here. It's just only a few miles. But he said, I want them to make sure it's full of oil so that you don't burn the transmission up. And when this man drove up in the back of me and told me that, I felt up about that tall. Something pricked my heart and said, God, you know, he said, look what I can do for you. Look what I can do for you. Look at the things that I can make happen if you'll just only believe me and have faith in me. And I just felt so small. And I said, I'm sorry, God. I'm sorry. I just almost broke down there. And that man, he said, you know, he said, I want to help you. I said, I don't know how I'm going to pay you, but I said, I will. He said, don't worry about it. And I got thinking about it, and I thought, you know, if I was to pay this man, and I wasn't trying to get out of paying him, but I thought, you know, if I paid him, he'd take away God's blessings from that man. And I thought, God's got more for him than what I could pay him. You know, God may bless that man with his business or whatever. And so I learned a very big lesson there, that God in any situation can come up with the goods. He can come up with, I don't care how bleak it looks, God can help us. I have faith in God. That raised my faith in God so much that it just helped increase my faith in God. But anyway, he helped me get that transmission put in, and we went on. We still didn't have any money, but I felt so relieved. I felt so, at the same time, I felt so small, but yet I felt so big, because I was a part of a faith and a righteousness that touched my heart, that I felt so unworthy. But I thought, God, I am serving a God that can do anything. I mean, anything. No matter what the situation is. And my faith increased in him. And I was so, I just loved him so much more. Not only did that service do me some good, but that experience that I went through proved to me that God can do anything. No matter what situation it's in, if we just turn it over to God. Because I was in a place where I could not do nothing. I couldn't do anything. I didn't have no control over the situation I was in, except maybe drag that thing home and try to fix it then. But God right there and then helped me to do more than I could have ever done on my own. So I know God can turn our situations around. He can turn things around, whether we're on the deathbed, whether our cars and things won't run, whether we don't have money to buy groceries to put on the table for our children, whether we don't have something to pay our bills for our utilities or whatever. God can bring about a change if we just put our trust in Him. If we can just put our trust in Him. Sometimes we, and I do this a lot, I get in a position where sometimes I don't feel like God's going to help me or the way that I think it should be done. But sometimes God will show me that He can do things for me that I don't even comprehend about what He's doing for me. And so God can touch us. God can touch our lives. God can touch our hearts. He can touch our children's hearts. He can touch our neighbors' hearts if we can just only trust in God. And so help me to increase my faith in God, and help me to put my faith and my trust in Him. So I just wanted to tell that because I know that done a lot for me. If you could only been there, you could have shared with that experience. And I wish you had have been. But if you get in those situations, just say, God, whatever you want me to go through, help me to go through this test. Because I don't want to go through that test no more. I don't want to walk down the road with my hands in my pocket, with my head hanging down, saying, Lord, what am I going to do now? You know, I want to get that test, and I want to pass that test. But God showed me in a situation that I could not control, He was in control. And from the very get-go, He was in control. And He done something for my pride. That's what He was working on, was my pride. And so I want to get pride out of the way of me and let God work on my heart, because that's what it's going to take. But pray for me.
Well, I would be very unthankful if I didn't get up and say something. Because Brother York was saying, I had an experience Tuesday where I very easily could have lost my life. It was raining out, and I was driving down Sardis. And I've heard about hydroplaning and everything else. And anyways, my car, I don't know if you guys know, but anyways, I don't even know how to explain it. Whenever the road just like... You know, there's no shoulder at all. Like, it just drops down, and it's, like, about this deep, you know. And it's, like, I knew it was raining, and I could see my car going over. And I was, like, well, I'm not going to panic. If I panic and jerk, then it's going to be a big wreck, you know. And, I mean, I'm talking, it was busy. It was around 5:30 traffic that was out. It was so busy. Well, anyways, I jerked over, and my tire hit that. And it's, like, the way that it was feeling is, like, something's not right. So I tried to barely even turn. And I just went over, and I mean, I was going straight for another truck that was coming at me. So I jerked, you know, I mean, I didn't jerk it really hard because, I mean, it's really weird. Like, I could actually think. And I was like, oh, I can't do it too hard. So I barely did it. And I did a 360, and I mean, I just went, and I started spinning, and I started, I mean, I was taking up both lanes of traffic and just sliding. You know, and I started, I mean, the only thing that I could even think was, God, please keep me safe, protect me. There was nothing that I could do. I mean, in a situation like that, I was totally helpless. I mean, I can't protect my car. I couldn't think quick enough. I was like, God, I don't even know what to do. And then right after I did that, and I slid for, I don't know, quite a few feet. It's really weird. It was like slow motion, but you know when you're hydroplaning, it's not. It's happening really fast, but it's like I could see. I knew that the truck that was coming at me was black, and it had tinted windows, and I knew that the car behind me was a silver car. I mean, I could see all of that whenever I was spinning. It was so weird. Anyways, and then at that time, right after I prayed that, and I said, God, please protect me, I went straight, like, towards the bushes, whatever. And there were trees, you know, it's like on a, I don't know if you guys know Sardis, but it's like there's wooded area on both sides of the road. Anyways, and I went, and I was facing the direction I was coming from on the shoulder of the road. And, I mean, the bushes and the trees were, like, right up against the side of my car. And it just stopped. Like, my car just stopped right there. And I was like, and then I looked around, and then all the cars had seen evidently what was going on, and they stopped. Like, I remember that the truck had to swerve, and he was over on the side of the road, just parked on the side of the road. You know, and they were all looking at me, and I was like, okay, what do I do now? I didn't know what to do. I'm like, do I call the cops? I mean, I didn't hit anything. So I was like, okay, and they were all just waiting for me, and then I just got back on the road, and yeah, I had to go the opposite direction and turn around and go back to town. But anyways, it was really weird because whenever I was driving back, I looked, and I'm telling you that was the area that I went off on was the only area that had a clearing. The rest of it, the trees were closer, like it was all closer to the road than where I went out. Seriously, I told Philip, I have got to take you and show you. I mean, it was like you could perfectly see my tire tracks where I just went right up, and I just was like, just right up against it, just, you know, where the trees and everything were, and it just, you know, and then it just showed me that God is a merciful God, and He is there, you know, and He loves me. And it's like, I, you know, I'm not thankful enough to Him, and I want to be more thankful to Him for what He's done for me, and that He's continually keeping His hand on me whenever I'm helpless and there's nothing that I can do. God, if I allow Him, if I know to call out on Him, He will be in control of my life. And I just felt like I'd be so ungrateful, unthankful if I did not say something about that, because it was I have never had an experience. I've never even had a wreck. I mean, you know, with me being the one behind the wheel, I've never, not that I'm a safe driver, obviously, and I don't know what to do in rainy weather, but, I mean, because I was going pretty fast. Seriously, I will tell you that. I was going pretty fast, which I knew better then, but anyways, I'm really thankful, you know, for God's mercy and for what you were saying. I was like, okay, God, I'll get up, I'll say something, you know, because I am thankful.
I was thinking, as Brother Smith was talking in the Bible study today, how that you can't just come in this and then automatically have a balance to your life in this. A lot of times you go through things that God begins to give you little trials as you grow in the Lord, and it brings about a balance in your life to trust Him, as Brother York and Sister Jennifer was saying. And I was thinking about that scripture in Isaiah, how it says, line upon line, precept upon precept, here little, there little, how God adds to our life through these little testimonies and faith. And God allows us to have those things because they'll help you grow, you know, like Sister Jennifer was, you know, saying, and Brother York, and how, you know, when you're in such a helpless situation and there's nothing else you can do but trust God. And I'm so thankful that I've had many, many experiences in my walk with God where He has, you know, helped me, where I felt so helpless and so small and needed Him. And I was thinking, as Brother York was talking, in one time in particular, and I too was in the Godfrey Church, and our church at the time had a church bus. And so I had my oldest son was about, I think he was about 4 years old, and I had decided to go to the campground and take the bus this time to go with everybody. And so, long story short, we got down there at the campground, and I'll never forget, I remember, I don't know how many of you know Brother Wadby, but Brother Wadby was got up and he was asked to take up the offering. And he was taking up the offering, and he began to tell just beautiful testimonies of what God had done for him in his time of need, and how even there were times when he had little babies and seemed like no milk or diapers or whatever, and would put his last little bit in the offering. And so he was taking up this offering. Well, in my mind, I knew I had $10, and I knew it was the last day of the meeting, and as soon as service was over, we was going to get back on this bus and go home. Well, the schedule of the bus was that halfway home, they would stop and everybody would eat. Well, I had no problem at all putting that $10 in that offering and just not eating. But I had a little child. And how do you tell your little kid, you're not going to eat, I had this as a 10. And so Brother Jason Daves was sitting right next to me, and I reached over and I whispered to him, I said, Brother Jason, and I told him my situation, I said, tell me the truth. I said, what would you do? Would you put in this whole 10 or would you not? I said, now keep in mind, I can go without food, but I've got a little one here. What would you do? And he thought about it for a minute, and he leaned back over to me and he said, let's watch God work something for us. And so I said, okay. And so I was like, oh, but not that I minded giving the offering, but like I said, the circumstances. So anyway, put that last $10 in the offering, and service was over and got on the bus. And as soon as I climbed on the bus, this sister come up and hugged me. And I thought, well, that was a little odd. And she reached over my hand and placed a $10 bill. And so then I went and I sat down my seat just thinking, oh, God, you are such a good God. Then there was a sister sitting right next to me, and she started talking to me. And she said, Sister Rhonda, she said, I just feel real led to do this. And she goes, I hope you don't mind. She reached over and gave me a $20. And so, needless to say, here, God tripled just within a matter of like an hour. So God tripled what I had just put in. So I could not wait to tell Brother Jason Daves, who was just a young teenage boy at the time. So I shared that with him. And of course, over the years, he's gotten up and given that testimony. And he told me, you'll never know what that did for my faith, you know, at just a young age. And he said, you know, that's helped him in times, you know, just that little testimony. And I thought, it's been little things like that that build your faith, that causes you, Brother Smith, to feel that balance in your life, feel like you can trust him and you don't have to fret or figure it out. You know, if you do the right thing, there's just God has certain laws that are put in to order. You do the right thing and you trust him and you have faith and he'll take care of you. It's just that simple. And so I just wanted to put in my little 2 cents, but I appreciate. I don't ever want to fail to thank God like Sister Jennifer. I could go on and on. That's just one of many testimonies. As I'm sure Brother York could tell you many more too, but many where I've been in situations where I just seem so helpless. But because of those situations, I feel like the Lord has given me great faith. And I appreciate him for those things that he's taken me through and things that I know he'll take me through in the future.
And I had my daughter who was pregnant at the time and 3 grandchildren, 2 dogs that we just got shots for, and my car driving back, we stopped by and paid a bill at Target and in Bryant, and I just started back under the overpass and my serpentine belt broke on my car. I had thought to roll the windows down because they're automatic, if not the window, and it was 100 degrees outside. And I had thought to put water in the car, so we had water, but I got out, and I didn't know what was wrong with the car. I lifted the hood, and I was crying, and I said, Lord, what am I going to do? And somebody was pushing their finger on my shoulder, and I looked around, and it was Brother Keith Fisher, Philip Fisher. He said, Sister Wallace, I said, are you real? He said, yeah. I said, where'd y'all come from? I didn't even see him or anything. And I've testified about this before, but it just seems like it's so fitting right now. And I don't want to go without thanking God and them for being there. I still don't know what I'd have done. It could have been a bad situation because my daughter could have got real sick. My grandchildren weren't feeling well, and the heat was so bad, and it was very hot. And anyway, they were there, and they said, what can we do? And I thought, well, I don't even know. I don't know what to do myself. But I thought just having them there just lifted my spirits and gave me courage that something could be done. I wasn't alone anymore, and you know, I felt like there was a man there that could take charge and a sister that was so loving. And I said, what are y'all doing here? Y'all can't be here right now. Y'all don't even live here. And they said, well, we just came by Target and took care of something. And I said, oh my God, it's a miracle. I said, God set y'all here knowing this was going to happen to me. And I said, I'm so blessed and don't even know it. But that's what happens with God's people. He tries our faith, and we have each other, and we're not going to be left alone, and God's so good. I just appreciate my brothers and sisters in the Lord, and I appreciate them being used by him, and he's going to take care of us.
Well, I'm thankful to be here today. I got a new job last week, so I start my new job tomorrow. Thank you. Yeah. The hours are kind of rough, but we'll be working nights, so won't get to be here as much, but I'm thankful I have a job. 8 months without a job, you know, you get kind of crazy, you know. So I'm thankful. I'm blessed. I got a good job. So thankful.
I wished you'd have got Sister Post to testify before you took up the offering. Somebody said at the campground, Brother Watson's always saying that when he takes up the offering, he's always saying after he gets the offering took up, he said, now I'll trade what y'all gave for what you still have. Anyway, the Lord is good. Appreciated Sister Cindy's good song, He Holds a Key. She wrote that several years back. The Lord gives her songs from time to time. That was her mama wrote songs, so I guess she got that from mama. But he does. He said to John in Revelation, said, I hold the keys to death and hell and the grave. So, and then he told Peter, 16th chapter of Matthew, he said, I'm going to give you the keys to the kingdom. And I want to tell you today, the Lord would like to give you keys. He'd like to give you keys. He's holding the keys, but he would like for you to get to a place that you don't only have the keys, you can give them away too. And it's just so good to have everyone here, Brother. Appreciate having Brother Johnson. I believe it's your first time visit. All the rest of our company's been here before, but appreciate when he introduced me to him, Charles Johnson. I thought, is this the Charles Johnson? I like, you know, Charles Johnson. The gospel singer. I've got some of his tapes. Said the world is in trouble, Lord. He's telling the Lord about the trouble we're in, and talks about his grandma in his songs. And he sang that song. I believe what made him popular was, I can't even walk without you holding my hand. But I see Brother Johnson got the same Holy Ghost, so we're sure glad to have you. We'd be glad to have you if you didn't have the Holy Ghost, but this makes one more thing that we're common with. God is gathering his people together today, and I was thinking while Brother Jerry York giving his testimony, it just seems like a small thing. But, you know, how many times can you be out on the highway and break down and somebody drive up behind you with your transmission that you need in the back of their van and get under the car with you and put it in? You know, you have to take situations like that. You can think it's just Ruth, the Bible said that it was her hap to light on the field of Boaz. Just happened to be. Yeah. Well, it called her to have an inheritance in God's eternal kingdom. And just so happened one day I landed here in the body of Christ. If you believe that, I've got lakefront property in Arizona that I'd like to sell. I was, you know, one of the little thing like that that happened to me, they jogged my memory of it when I was in the Dominican Republic. And the work there was a young work that just started. It was such a, when God sent me over there, it was so intense. And it was, God was doing something. I wasn't, you know, I mean, I was the man God was using to go over there and start a missionary work. But I saw right away that I wasn't doing it. I saw right away that God got a hold of this situation. And after a couple of years, I went over there and we were going to go to a meeting in Haiti. And it was about, it'd probably take us at least 6, maybe 8 hours to go get there. You can drive from one end of the Dominican Republic to the other one, and well, it's only less about 175 miles from one end of the island to the other. But the roads are winding, and then when you get to Haiti, you have to slow down to sometimes just barely crawling over some of those roads. They've got holes in them that your cars disappear in. You have to climb out of them. And anyway, we had been trying for 2 days to get away to take everybody over there. I finally rented a van. I think it held about 20 people. Big transport van. And we had that thing loaded down with luggage and our clothes. And I had a big briefcase that I always carried when I went over there, because especially when I knew I was going to Haiti. And when I go to Haiti, you don't just go to Haiti and just eat anything you want to eat. You'll wind up very sick. Your system can't take their water or their food even a lot, and you have to be very careful. So I remember I got some of those dried soup. What do you call it? Dehydrated soup that come in packages. No, it's like noodles and stuff, but it's dehydrated, huh? Yeah. So I had some of those in my briefcase. I had a little jar of peanut butter and some crackers. But I had a camera. Sister Smith and I had bought a really expensive camera, digital. That's back when digital cameras were more expensive and fewer pixels and all of that. I think we paid $850 maybe or something like that for this. It's pretty high for this camera. But I wanted good pictures of the missionary work. And so we invested in that, and I had it with me, and I always had my computer in there. Anyway, we went on, finally got this van rented. Several things happened that made me feel like, you know, I don't know if I ought to go. It just seemed like so much hindrance. But finally, Brother Haven Baxter was with us. He flew over there. He wanted to see the work and be with me in a little while. And he wanted to go to the meeting in Haiti. And so he was with us. And we finally got on the road in the evening. And meeting started the next day. So I wanted to go on and get there. And so we drove about... Oh, and the guy that we rented the van from, we had to rent him too. He wouldn't let us take the van. We had to pay for the driver. So we had him going with us. And I'm so glad that we did, because we didn't get 2 hours away from home, or where at La Romana, where La Romana is on the eastern tip of the island. We was going to the western tip to go across the border into Haiti. And the van got hot and started knocking, and he threw a rod in the van. And it was at night. We was in the dark, you know, it's dark. And them little old roads, we was out in the middle of nowhere. And so Brother Emilio Green, he got out of the van and he said, I'm gonna get to town. I'm gonna try to get a ride and go on to town and get us help. Because we knew we weren't going anywhere in that vehicle. So he took off. Where are you going? Where are you going to go? And he said, I'll be all right. I said, well, you know, it's your country. I guess you know what you're doing. So he took off. Well, in about 30, 45 minutes, here come a big bus. And it stopped on the other side of the road. And Emilio Green got out. He said, get everybody, get out of there. Get all the luggage. Let's get it over here in this van, in this bus. I said, Where'd you find this bus? He said, well, I got a ride, and then I stopped this bus, and they're headed to La Romana. So he said, we'll have to go back to La Romana. And I said, yeah, we're not going to Haiti tonight, I can tell you that. So they said, get Brother Smith and bring him over here and put him on the bus. And I said, well, make sure you get all the luggage. They said, we are. And they had stacked luggage out there on the ground and unloading everything. And anyway, they ushered me across the highway, and I got on this bus. Well, we took off on the bus, and just kindly after everybody kind of got settled down, I said, now, y'all got my briefcase, didn't you? Oh, yeah, we got everything. And I said, somebody check. I said, where's it at? They said, it's back there. And they had stuff back in that. I said, well, somebody check, make sure it's there. They went back there and they looked and looked and looked, and finally they came back and they said, it ain't there. I said, oh, Lord. My Bible was in it. That's the worst thing. Take a preacher's Bible away from him, that's like, you know, I mean, Wyatt Earp couldn't shoot with anybody else's gun. He needed his. You know? You ain't near quick a draw something strange hanging in your holster. So I just, you know, my Bible is worth more than anything else that was in there. And that just about killed me. I said, we've got to go back. Well, they stopped the bus, and some police came by. And Brother Emilio Green got out, and he went over and talked to the policeman. And I think I had to give him some money. He paid that policeman money to take him back to that van. He said, I'll get back, but I'll go get your briefcase. So he went with the police, and we went on to La Romana. And then Brother Green came back. He called me on the phone a little while. And he said, Brother Smith, your briefcase is not there. It's not there. I thought, oh, God. I couldn't do anything else. Just went on to the motel and went to my room, and I told the Lord. I said, well, Lord, I said, you know about it. You know all about it. If you don't want me to have my Bible, I'll just have to suffer with that. I said, but I know you know where it's at, and I would really appreciate it if you'd help me get it back. You know, well, the next day, well, I got up and I called Elias Cipriano. I said, let's call some of the radio stations or TV stations and see if they'll tell about this on the news. And so we did. We called them, but they was going to charge a, you know, they found out I was an American, so they was going to charge a terrible price. So I said, well, forget it. We just forget. I'll just have to lose it. So I went through that day And then the next morning, about 6 o'clock, Elias C. Brian was banging on my motel room door. He said, "Brother Smith, wake up." And I got up out of bed and opened the door, and he said, "We got to go, we got to go." I said, "Where are we going?" He said, "We got to go get your Bible." I said, "Where's it at?" He said, "Well, I've got the address, and I know the man that has it." I said, "Well, how did you find that out?" Well, his secretary, his church secretary, and a girl that she went to college with was on a bus the night before going somewhere. And the boy that found my briefcase sitting next to that van right after we left, he rode by there on a bicycle and found it and got it. And then he took it on. And he went through it, and of course he felt like, "Man, I'm selling this camera, I'm selling this stuff, make me some money." But he lived in a little village next to an old man, and this old man got to looking at this stuff, and he got to looking in my Bible. And he told that boy, he said, "Son," he said, "this stuff belongs to a man of God." He said, "You better not sell none of this stuff." He said, you'll get in trouble with God if you do. He said, "You better find the man that owns this." Well, in the back of my Bible was a picture about that big that just a few days before, one of the pastors in La Romana gave me that picture of his church and his people out in front of it. They had took that picture and he wanted me to have it. And I didn't know it, but on the back of the picture had his name and address. And that boy got on a bus to La Romana, spent the last money he had and got on a bus to La Romana and brought that briefcase and went to that church, and the preacher told him, said, "That's Brother Smith's briefcase." He said, "I ain't giving it to you." He said, "Where's he at?" Well, I had left and went to Santiago or somewhere that night to go to church the night before that he was in La Romana. He wouldn't give it to anybody because he thought God would kill him if he didn't get it to me. So he took it back. He got on a bus, but he gave the guy, said, here's who I am. If you see him, you tell him I got his briefcase and I'm looking for him. So he went back to Santo Domingo. But when he got on a bus to go back to Santo Domingo, he sat right in front of those two women, that Elias's secretary and this girl that went to school. And he was telling about this, finding this briefcase, and he had it with him. And those girls got to talking to him, look, and they told him, I said, "That belongs to Brother Smith. He's over our church. He's a missionary." And so he got to talking to them, and they said, "We'll take it to him." He said, "You ain't getting this briefcase. I'm taking this back. I got to see this man, make sure he gets it, because I've been told I'm going to die if I don't get it back to him." So they got his name and his phone number and took it back to Elias Cyprian, and Brother Cyprian called him and he said, "Yeah, I got it," and he told him where he was. So he came, got me, and we drove to Santo Domingo, and he took me to a little old hut down by the ocean, and there was my briefcase. And he repented to me for eating my soup and my peanut butter and my crackers. But he said, "I didn't get nothing else out of there." And I said, "But we're hungry. We was hungry and it was food. We didn't know about you." And there was one other thing missing. It was a red pencil, a pencil with red lead in it. You know, I noticed that was gone. So anyway, I prayed for him, and his mother was sick, and they asked us to pray for her. And so we prayed for him, and I gave him a little reward, and which was probably a big reward to him, but it was anyway. But I thought to myself, God, you have proved to me to lay a briefcase down in a third world country on the highway in the middle of the night, and then drive off and leave it. And you show me where it's at and get it back to me within about 24 to 36 hours. That I said, I know there's a God in heaven. Hallelujah. I thought, the chances of me finding that in America would have been, you know, slim to none. But to find it over there, and I wasn't going to be there too many more days. And I come back with my briefcase, and I still have my Bible. So, we're serving a good God. And he holds the key. In Matthew 16, I thought I might just say something on that. Where, and I know many of you have read this, you've heard it preached on. In the 13th verse, it says, when Jesus came into the coast of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? And they said, some say that thou art John the Baptist, some Elias, and others Jeremiah, are one of the prophets. They evidently believed back then, some of them, that some of these men would resurrect, that they'd come back. And he said unto them, but whom say ye that I am? And Simon Peter answered and said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered and said unto him, blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say also unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I'll build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. And whatsoever thou shalt loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. And and he charged his disciples that they should tell no man that he was Jesus the Christ. See, he wasn't wanting that broadcasted right then. He knew, number one, it would take a revelation from God. And don't you know, he must have been thinking, walking along with them, he must have been thinking, I want to see how these men, if they really got a vision, if God's really revealed to them, they're really getting this. And so he first asked them, who do men say I am? He knew that men didn't know who he was. There's different things being said about him because he was doing so many miraculous things and stirring up so much in every locale that he was in. And so, but no doubt he had in his mind, you know, I want to get to what my real question is. That is, who do you say I am? Peter, being always seemed like the one to speak up. That's the way me and my mom are. We always open our mouths before we engage our minds sometimes. At least we're extroverts. And either sanguines or cholerics or extroverts. They got to say something when you're talking. My mother didn't have any brothers. She just had four sisters, but they were all extroverts, except for one, and she wasn't an extrovert all the time, but when she was around her sister, she was. And they'd all four get together, and they'd all be four talking at the same time. They didn't know, not one of them know what the other one was saying, but they was all talking. Mother was the littlest of them, and they have a story about her, how one time when they all got together that she jumped up in the middle of all of them and said, y'all shut up and let me talk. She wanted to say something. She wasn't getting heard. But Peter was like that. I mean, he would just speak right out. The Lord say, who do you say I am? And Peter said, Lord, thou art the Christ, And when Jesus began to tell him, look, no man revealed that to you. Nobody's convinced you of that, but God has showed you something. And then he said, thou art Peter. And on this rock, and you know, his name was Simon, but the Lord called him Petros, Peter, a rock. That's what that means. Petros means a rock. And what, you know, when the Lord met him back, first met him, he named him Peter. Isn't God amazing how God just, no doubt, you know, Jesus probably didn't foresee what he was saying. He just said it. God, that's how God works. When God's working in your life, you do things that, you know, is just not normal. But it's God. I'm telling you, saints, it's a marvelous thing for God to have a hold of your life. For God to be dealing with your life. That look at all the people in the world that seemingly, and it's not just seemingly, that many of them don't know, they don't know God. They don't have any connection with God. And the reason is there's no way for God to connect with them except through creation. That's how God connects with them. That, you know, the Bible says they're without excuse. The very creation, if a fool says in his heart, there's no God. If you can't look at this world and the creation of God and recognize there's a great God somewhere, you're a fool. That's all. I don't mean none of y'all, because you wouldn't be here if you didn't think there was a God, but I just mean anybody that thinks that way. Foolish. Doesn't mean that they're stupid. Just means they're ignorant. The fool's ignorant. He don't know. Somebody stupid can't learn. So, but to be, but to have your life having been somewhere that God has a way to deal with you. I mean, if you came out of a family that was had some measure of God in it, you had some upbringing about God, or even greater than that, just however much more greater God's been able to deal with you. I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that I can't remember. I was just thinking today. I don't remember who it was. Maybe somebody that spoke here that the thought entered my mind that God, God's had made a connection with that person way back, and that's what, and God has a way to keep dealing with us if we'll respond to it. We have to respond to God. This is not all, you can't put all of it on God. We have a responsibility in it too, and that's yielding. It's responding to God. Just the creation, just beholding His creation gives you a measure of faith. Every man's got a measure of faith. If you've got enough intelligence just to behold God's creation, you can know there's something marvelous in this. There's something has brought this all about. And then to seek God and pursue Him, and try to locate God. You won't get it all figured out in a year or two or ten. Unless you're living in a time where God's giving great revelation. And there's more of God available to man. That's something to know. That there's been times when men didn't know as much about God. God wasn't talking. He doesn't always talk as much. At certain times, it's not time. God's not dealing. God can't bring man to a fullness, a full knowledge of Him, just any time. It takes God getting man prepared. Look, it took God 4,000 years to get this world ready to receive Jesus Christ. It took that long after the fall and man winding up in such a sinful state. And sin having such a gross effect on mankind and the creation of God. We still don't know what it's going to be like when God lifts the curse off this earth and we see what was made in the very beginning. We see a world, an environment without a curse where sin hadn't had any effect on it. There's, you know, God's had to, a lot of things that's happened to this world. It's happened in our environment because of man's fall. God knew man would fall when he made him. But he still knew that there's some. There's at least a remnant that I'll gather that can respond, and they can be made like me and have my spirit, my mind, my character working in them. And God was willing. He's willing to take the losses to get. And I don't think that I would have to say, along with the Apostle Paul, when he spoke those words, eye has not seen, man hasn't seen, eye hasn't seen, ear hasn't heard the things that God has prepared for us. I'll say that. In the Gentile world, we have never seen what God has got prepared. And our ear has never heard. We've never been in a sevenfold candlestick light. We've never heard the words that are completely pure, that will completely transform lives and not take so long about doing it. And there's something coming in the end of this world that the Lord he's prepared in his time. There's a time and place for everything under the sun, Ecclesiastes said. And God is bringing us to a place. And this revelation that he gave Peter, that God gave Peter concerning Jesus. He said, you, Peter, thou art Peter, and upon this rock. What rock? Not on Peter. Peter wasn't the rock. He wasn't, you can read the New Testament and see that he wasn't a rock any more than the other 12 apostles was. He may have been a chief speaker among them and a chief leader even among them. But the revelation of God wasn't dependent upon one man. But it's dependent upon God giving revelation to man. That's the rock. If you can get the foundation, get on the rock of